Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Is It Worth It? Rambling Edition. As I'm driving into Fort Smith, I figured I'd just give a little bit of time here to discuss, you know, what I've been doing lately, gaming-wise, and so on and so forth. As you may know, I've been really busy due to, just life. We'll just leave it at that. But I have had a chance to do some gaming as of late. I have access now to a PS5. And as such, I thought I'd give the new Final Fantasy a chance. Now, this will be, more in-depth if you were to listen to the RPG show's upcoming podcast regarding Final Fantasy 16. You'll get a much more in-depth look at it. But I thought, maybe it'd be good just to talk about it a bit here since I am playing it. Unfortunately, James does not have access to a PlayStation 5, and as such, he was unable to play it, but I'll give you my thoughts on it. Firstly, it is, a gorgeous game, obviously. Anytime something has the name Final Fantasy on it and it's brand new, especially the titles that are numbered, they're going to look really, really great, and this doesn't disappoint. You have really big, just beautiful, sprites, I guess. I don't know that they're sprites anymore, but just everything looks really, really great. That said, the music is also, of course, really great, but these are things we've come to expect from every Final Fantasy. Doesn't necessarily mean the game is good. Now, just disclaimer, I do think this game is pretty good. Like, I've had a fun time with it. I'm about 20-ish hours in, but it is going to sound like I really hate this game. And I have a lot of problems with it. Where to start? Firstly, when you begin the game, you can select story mode or action mode. Now, you would think that the difference would be that if you choose story mode, you would get more story. That is not the case. You get the same story no matter what you do, but if you choose story mode, you start the game with items that you can equip in place of other slots. You have, I believe, 3 ring slots, which I guess you only have 3 fingers, but whatever. So these 3 ring slots can be used to equip things that increase your defense or elemental ability or offense, things of this nature. But if you start with story mode, you'll be awarded these rings where you can equip that effectively make the game just a mash-a-mash-a game. And by mash-a-mash, I mean you just mash the square button and you will do all kinds of combos. You can equip one that will make you automatically do combos. You can equip one that will make you automatically dodge, automatically heal, all these things. So it effectively makes the game press the square button to win. So if you want to play that way, you can. Otherwise, it's a fairly in-depth combo system in this game. It's much more action-oriented. In fact, I would say that this game isn't an RPG in the truest sense of the word. It'll probably be labeled as such because it is a Final Fantasy title, but I'm hard-pressed to call it an RPG. In fact, I think God of War is probably more of an RPG than this game. Now, it does have an overarching storyline that you follow throughout the life of a guy named Clyde, who basically just what we've come to know as a protagonist from Final Fantasy. He looks just like Cloud or Squall or anybody of that nature. He's just kind of a waifish guy with really nice spiky hair and, So you follow him and basically you just play as Clyde throughout his life. You start off when you're 16, and then the second act is when he's like in his mid-30s, and the last act being when he was in his like mid-40s, I believe. But the storyline is basically thus, and if you don't want spoilers, don't listen to this. You were born into a family that is, you're a prince, of course, and you were born into this family that is of the Phoenix, I guess. It's a kingdom where the royal family always has someone that is born as the icon of Phoenix or can summon the icon of Phoenix. Icons are effectively Aeons or Espers in this game. In fact, they're all ones you will recognize. Unlike the other games, not everyone can summon an icon. In fact, there is only one person that can summon any given icon in this fantasy realm. And in the beginning, you were told that there are 8 icons in total, and in order for someone else to be able to summon said icon, the previous summoner has to die, and then a new one will be born into it. It was hoped that you would be the icon of Phoenix, but you were not. When you were born, what's known as gifted by the Phoenix, which means you can use some of the Phoenix's powers in the way of, like, turning your sword on fire, shooting fireballs, things like that. But you cannot summon the icon, and your power is quite limited next to the actual icon, who is actually your younger brother. I believe his name is Philip. Now, Philip is around 9 at the beginning of the game, and he is very weak. He's seen coughing often, and you are serving as his protector. I forget what they call it exactly, but you're one of the bodyguards for your younger brother, especially since he is so weak. Now, your mother in this is extremely disappointed in you because you were not born the icon of Phoenix. Your father, the king, loves you very much, doesn't appear to have any powers himself, but is a, you know, a warrior and a good guy. Your mom straight up hates you. It's kind of weird. She has no maternal instinct for you whatsoever. And indeed, as you progress in the early storyline, these people come to try and steal your brother because having control of an icon user is, you know, a big deal. It's effectively like having a nuclear armament in this world. And so they come to try and get him or kill him or whatever, and you end up protecting him in the castle. Your father gets beheaded, and your younger brother ends up fighting another icon that comes out of nowhere, and it's Ifrit. And what makes that interesting is Ifrit isn't one of the 8 known icons. Now, spoilers abound again, but this wasn't particularly surprising to me right off the bat, because your character Clyde, when Ifrit emerges, gets knocked out, but is somehow seeing everything that is happening as well, and can't seem to move his body, so on and so forth. So it's pretty obvious to me that Clyde was the one that was in control, or at least summoned Ifrit. And indeed, that's correct. He is an icon that previously was unknown. So you find that out about midway through the game, but again, to me, it was blatantly obvious. And then, you know, your brother seemingly dies. Of course, this is Final Fantasy, so he's not really dead. But Ifrit defeats the Phoenix in this epic battle, which you get these battles between two icons quite a bit throughout the game. Unfortunately, they take away all the power that you have, basically, and you're not really controlling the icon as much as you're playing like a series of QTEs, it feels like, because you'll watch like this big epic scene, and then they'll say press X now quickly, or, you know, press O to dodge or whatever, and it doesn't really feel like you're playing the game as much as you're just interacting with a movie. That being said, it's still a really kick-ass movie graphically and so on and so forth, so, you know, take that for what it's will, what you will. But yeah, you defeat the Phoenix, and then excuse me, your mother sees you are still alive, and at first she just wants to kill you. She just, you know, she's like, oh, you know, her dad's dead, my good son is dead, what do I care about this one, just kill him. And then she realizes, you know, something that your father had said, that you were a great soldier and that you would be a really great soldier when you got older. And she decides, well, let's keep him alive, but let's brand him and put him into the army. I guess there's a special group of branded They don't really question what they're supposed to do. They just fight for the king. No questions asked, so on and so forth. And what branded are in this world, people with magic are looked down upon. They are the minority of this world and are controlled by normal people. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because there's certainly enough magic users where if they wanted to rise up, they could easily defeat the armies, you know, because especially the icon wielders. I mean, there are several scenes where you see an icon summon and these things are like Power Ranger Zord big, and they just like are sweeping through entire armies of men. But for whatever reason, these people are enslaved in some countries and looked down upon in others, as being less than. There are several scenes throughout the game that emphasize this, you know, where they literally treat them as less than animals, really. And when they use up all their magic, these branded or these magic users will turn to stone and die. But they just use them and use all their magic up for stupid things like, you know, making well water or watering plants or keeping fish cold or, you know, whatever it might be. They're like their version of appliances are these people. Now, they also used to, and still do to some extent, use crystals found from these giant mountains of magic made of crystal. They'd chip away portions of this, and these crystals would be able to use magic until the crystal itself broke or disappeared. But they were farming them so extently that they're running low, I guess, and then there are problems involved in mining these crystals as well, in that it causes some kind of magic gas to appear and makes people go crazy, so it's hard to mine. And also, as they mine it and use these crystals' powers, it causes the land surrounding to turn into a wasteland. I think they call it the Blight. So yeah, you're conscripted into this army. They brand your face. That's why they call them the Branded. They put this damn pretty intricate tattoo on your face, which I thought was funny because, you know, it would take time to make this kind of elaborate, cool-looking tattoo, when in reality, if they were to brand your face, it would probably just be like a burnt-in X mark that would take seconds to do, because they're not going to sit there and brand you with an elaborate tattoo. But whatever, it looks cooler. So yeah, you're branded, you're in this army, and you are, you know, this is after your father dies and so on and so forth, and now you're like in your early 30s, I want to say, and you're in a small group of men tasked to find this other icon and kill her, because this other army has gained control of this icon. Well, you go through this desert-like area, and you find the girl that is supposed to be the icon being led by this army by chains, and she is complying because if she does not, they will kill children in front of her, other branded children. And it turns out this girl that they have is one of your childhood friends. And as soon as you realize that, you actually fight your brothers in arms to save her. And in doing so, you know, you knock her out, but then you get to meet the coolest character in this game by a mile, in my opinion, Sidolphus, or Sid, as, you know, you may have been awaiting. He appears in every Final Fantasy game and doesn't disappoint here. And you quickly learn that Sid is an icon himself, the icon of Rama, so he's completely badass, but again, he's like dying. He's always coughing up blood and just doesn't seem to be too well off. And right away I was like, oh, this guy's gonna die. And I wasn't disappointed. Of course, they could do good writing, but then it wouldn't be a Final Fantasy game, or at least a modern one. Yeah, so Sid, icon of Rama, and voice acted by one of the just coolest sounding guys I've ever heard. I don't know, I really love this character, Sid, and I was sad to see him go. He is with you for a good amount of time, and it turns out Sid used to be in, like, the Imperial Army or something himself. He was a general, and He got sick of the way the branded were treated. The icons are usually treated much better because of how powerful they are. But he was getting sick of how others were treated. And so he left to try and start saving the branded from the fate of being enslaved. And he created like this area in the middle of the Blight where no one would go, because you can't use magic in the Blight because there is no magic to draw from. And started bringing the branded there so that they might live a normal life. And, you know, when you learn of this, you decide begrudgingly over time to help him. And then when your lady friend wakes up, she also helps. And she is the icon of Shiva. So you're the icon of Ifrit. You're now pretty strong. You got these three icons on your side. But as you continue through the story, you learn Cid used to be in a romantic relationship with the icon of Garuda. And the icon of Garuda is currently in a relationship with the icon of Titan. Very Game of Thrones, very soap opera, if you will, type storyline. But is what it is. Yeah, so eventually you do meet up with the icon of Garuda, and you fight her one-on-one eventually and managed to defeat her. She cannot believe that a normal person defeated her. At this point, you don't know you're the icon of Ifrit, but you defeat her, and not only do you defeat her, but when she's laying in defeat, you walk over and some of her power gets siphoned off of her and you gain wind powers. Which is not something that has previously been seen. So now you have powers of the Phoenix and powers of Garuda that you can use in your normal combat stuff. And that opens up a whole new line of combos that you can do. You can mix and match combos with the wind and the fire and so on. And as you progress through the game, you are getting all these other icons as well as they get defeated. Of course, Cid tragically loses his life shortly after this and gives you his power before he dies, and then subsequently you fight Titan, etc., etc. There, like I said, there's 8 total. They're all ones you would know. Bahamut and Odin are in there as well. Forget who else. I'm going to guess Leviathan, although I think I've only seen in my playthrough thus far 7 of the 8, 8 if you include Ifrit, and I'm sure that there would be additional icons that they have not yet been discovered as well, but as per the 20-ish hours I think that I've put in, I have not seen any other ones aside from those. But that's effectively as far as I've gotten in the story. I got to where you're a middle-aged man. They discover where you're at, and they destroy the headquarters that you have, and you end up having to make a new headquarters on an abandoned airship. I'm sure that'll come into play at some point, too. I don't know if it'll actually fly, but it would make sense, you know, that anytime there's an old abandoned airship in any game, be it Borderlands 2 or a Final Fantasy, eventually that thing gets airborne. So, looking forward to that. But that's the storyline. It's not, like, super engaging, and it is super predictable. So, you know, take it for what it is. It was entertaining. They do things throughout the game in the way of there's actually, like, nudity, although they won't show you like a female's nipples. They do show a man's nipples, but they just look like two dark circles. They don't like really make it detailed, which is fine, but it's like it's still surprising to see in a Final Fantasy game. You know, they do, it's like watching a late night Skinamax movie that has now been adapted for TV. They'll show you just about everything except for, you know, actual nudity. So there you go. If you're into that sort of thing, if you want to see two animated characters going at it. It happens more than you would think. Also, they adopt cuss words within this version of Final Fantasy, which isn't new. I remember being like, when Final Fantasy VII first dropped and I saw the word shit, I shit my pants. I couldn't believe that would be in any game at that point, to be honest, but especially a Final Fantasy title. I was just like jaw dropped, to be honest. However, they go a step further than that. You will hear F-bombs. There's a gentleman I talked to that used the word cock. This isn't your granddad's Final Fantasy. This is something entirely new. Gameplay-wise, like I said, like, you can make it as easy as you want to make it. Otherwise, it's not too bad. I mean, it's, think God of War. It's effectively the same as that. Now, as far as leveling goes, levels don't seem to matter. They just don't. And weapons don't seem to matter. Like, the increased attack you get from a new weapon doesn't seem to do much. You do get a new, sword or whatever, and it will look different on screen, which is cool. And then it does have an upgrade system where you can upgrade weapons, and you find materials fucking everywhere in the game. And I've never once not had the materials needed to immediately upgrade whatever sword or piece of armor that I found. So unlike a lot of other games where you go searching around for things, this just seems to give them to you. Now, I am the type of gamer that will look in every corner and fight every enemy I come across. So maybe because I'm that type, I just always had the items necessary. But it just seems silly. And then as soon as you upgrade it, it seems like another 15, 30 minutes gameplay, you find a brand new piece to replace it. So, meh. Like I said, like, it didn't seem to me that the levels of these weapons or armor was really doing much of fucking anything. But I mean, it does give you the sense that you're getting a lot stronger. And you probably do. Like, the difference between the first sword and the last sword that you get in the game is probably huge. But the difference between the first sword and the second or third sword is not. Also, this game is, like, very, very linear. I've heard people say it opens up a bit as you go. I haven't really seen that, and I'm in the last act. Effectively, you have a map, and you don't, like, travel in between worlds or maps or towns or whatever. You just, a new one will appear on the map, and you just kind of instantly go there. It'll say travel to blah, 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 and you just kind of go there. Think, like, Final Fantasy X in that regard, like, once you get the airship. Kind of boring. I didn't care for that. I like exploration, which they give you the sense of exploration in that when you go to an overworld battle area or whatever, it looks very much like a MMO, like, think Final Fantasy 14. The areas look a lot like that. And you can explore around and maybe find some treasure chests or whatever. But none of these contain anything that is, like, crazy good. They're all just, you know, more materials or some gold or whatever. You're never rewarded for exploration whatsoever. Same with side quests. There's a lot of side quests in the game. And once again, unlike what I would consider to be a good RPG, where side quests have to be sought out and you find them by talking to NPCs and so on and so forth. In this, when new side quests become available, they appear on your map with, like, a big green exclamation point or something of that nature, and you can go directly there and just do them. It makes it just entirely too easy and linear to me. It just makes it feel like you're checking off a checklist instead of, like, trying to find secrets and so on and so forth. And of these side quests, I've done every one so far that it's been shown me. Excuse me. Most of them don't have anything worthwhile to get. You'll get, like, a little story arc of an NPC or something like that, which is nice, but the rewards, the physical rewards for it are always, oh, so here's some material or some gold or whatever. The only exception being you can get back your childhood Chocobo by doing a certain quest, a side quest, and then you can summon the Chocobo, which is cool. But unlike Chocobos of old, while you're riding the Chocobo, you can get into battles. The Chocobo makes it very easy for you to run away. Battling on back of the Chocobo, I wouldn't recommend. It's not only difficult, because it just kind of like does this weird jump kicky thing towards the enemy, it's not very effective. So you're much better off, if you're wanting to get into a fight, to do it, you know, on foot. Speaking of fights, getting a little bit about more about that, you do have companions. The most noteworthy being your wolf dog Torgel, who at the beginning of the game is a puppy, and at the end of the game is like a very old wolf. It's like a wolf hound, I guess. And Torgel's pretty cool. He can do a number of things. You can tell him to attack, and then he'll attack. You can tell him to stay back, and he'll like do more ranged attacks. Or you can tell him to heal you. Which, okay, a wolf can heal you somehow. I don't know. It doesn't make sense, but it's fine. Unfortunately, you don't control Torgel or any other NPC. You'll get other ones throughout the game that do various things. And they are kind of a non-entity. Like, sometimes Cid will be with you, or the icon of Shiva, which I'm blanking on her name. It's like Mary or Marie or something. And yeah, they're cool because like every once in a while they'll like do a big spell. You'll see a bunch of lightning on the screen, or you'll see, you know, a big burst of ice or whatever. But they don't do it very often. Oftentimes, if you look at them, they're just kind of a non-entity, just running around an enemy, hitting them every so often, as opposed to like your character, who is just constantly attacking and moving and dodging and weaving and such. These guys are just kind of almost lazily, you know, attacking, so they're not much help. It sucks that you can't control them. They don't level up, really. I guess they kind of do, especially Torgel, but it, again, it doesn't seem to do a whole hell of a lot. Torgel's cool because he can keep your combos going if you're wanting to get like a big combo chain. Outside of that, like, you're really just playing by yourself. Combat is fun, except for the icon battles that I mentioned before, which are kind of just, again, cinematic things that you have QTEs on. But, you know, overall, the game ain't bad, man. You know, I'm hard-pressed to call it an RPG because levels don't seem to matter. And equipment doesn't seem to matter a whole hell of a lot. What does this old man want? He wants a turn-based, you know, RPG again. He wants something where, you know, we just haven't had it since Final Fantasy X, unfortunately. Not in its entirety. And it just, I like having control of every character. I like turn-based battles. I'm in the minority, I'm sure. But, you know, my favorite Final Fantasies are all the early ones, you know, 1, 2, 2/4, and 6/3. Those are probably my all-time favorites. You know, 1, just for being what it was on the Nintendo, obviously it doesn't hold up to today's standards, but I would say that 4 and especially 6 definitely do. You know, 7 I liked, but it had its problems. 8 is a pile of gutter trash. No, it's okay, but I mean, it had a lot of problems with it. That was the beginning of the end for me. And then they went back and did 9, which I liked. A lot of people do hate 9. I really like 9. It had problems as well. Like, really, there hasn't been a great Final Fantasy since 6, in my opinion. I mean, 7's fine, don't get me wrong. But this just doesn't feel it. To me, it doesn't feel like a Final Fantasy. It feels like God of War set in a Final Fantasy world, right? And that's fine, and it's a good game, but I would have much preferred this to be, you know, like more like Dirge of Cerberus, where it was a side game rather than a numbered Final Fantasy, because it just doesn't feel like one to me. Overall, game is good. I would recommend just waiting a few months before buying it. Right now, it's still like $69 at Target. But you can get this game for, you know, I would guess under $10 within 3-4 months. That's what I did with Final Fantasy 15. Didn't buy it immediately. Found it for $5 just a few months later. But yeah, you know, if you're a PlayStation 5 owner and you like RPGs, obviously you're listening to this show. Yeah, maybe check it out eventually. Again, it's not really an RPG, but it's RPG adjacent, I guess. And I guess that's all I want to say about that. I have arrived in Fort Smith. I don't have much else to say regarding Final Fantasy 16 or the PlayStation 5 in general. I will just say, you know, briefly for those of you that haven't played one, to me, it really feels as though it's just a slightly better PlayStation 4. Like, it's faster. You know, load times that you would notice on games aren't there. My PlayStation 5, it has less memory than my PlayStation 4, which is, you know, weird. I'm sure they'll come out with a 2 terabyte model or something like that, but the one I have right now is like 850 gigs. My PlayStation 4 has a terabyte. Of course, I guess you can get an external hard drive, things to mitigate that. But the controller's neat. It feels a bit like a PlayStation 4 controller, but it fits my hand a bit better. It's a bit larger. And it has a built-in microphone, which I don't think the PlayStation 4 had. It retains the ability of plugging in headphones, which I always thought was like just a really cool feature that the PlayStation 4 had, and now the 5 has it as well, where if I'm gaming next to someone sleeping or something like that, I can put on a pair of headphones, still have surround sound. It's amazing. So, and it's also good for if you're recording like karaoke or something. I've recorded some karaoke songs through the PlayStation 4 in the past by hooking up my Zoom through the PlayStation 4 controller and playing like karaoke through, say, YouTube or whatever, and then being able to sing into it. And, you know, it's so it has some neat features. Overall, I think it's a good system. Is it worth, you know, $500? I don't know. Like, I would have thought it had gone down by now. It probably will soon when they, you know, release an updated, slimmer model or whatever. Because the PlayStation 5 is fucking massive. It is very, very big. It's the biggest console I've seen since the original Xbox. So keep that in mind. You're going to need some room to be able to put this thing in your room. And it's not like the PlayStation 4, at least the model I had on PS4, where you could potentially stack another console on top of it. It is not flat. It's more concave or convex, like the PlayStation 3. So keep that in mind. I'm sure you've seen pictures of it. It is a goofy looking thing. So that's about it. You know, listen to our friends over at the RPG show, the aforementioned, and, you know, just, I don't know, keep listening here. Me and James, I've talked to him recently. He was in Boston yesterday, but he got an invite, due to some of his students, doing research for something that's above my head. And they all got an invite to Boston because it's being presented to like some prestigious school there or something. So good on you, James. Very cool. But he's doing well. He said he is ready to record whenever I am. So I'm going to be in talks with him to be able to start recording very soon. I have gotten the internet where I am at now. That was a bit of a chore to find 5G in the middle of fucking nowhere, because I live deep in the country now. And internet. Previously, my mom was telling me that there's just no real internet out there, but turns out that Verizon has spent several billion dollars over the last couple years putting in new towers, and that she was unaware of it. So now we do have 5G internet out there, so make it a lot easier for me to record, so on and so forth. So hopefully those episodes will be coming out forthwith. Until then, keep it retro, and we'll see you next time.